The work session is now in order. First order of business is the infamous roll call. So we have Mr. Robert Bayer.
Here.
Braulio.
He is excused.
Is he in Thailand?
He is traveling. I'm not sure where he's at right at the moment.
That's right. You don't have a Santa tracker?
No.
A Braulio tracker.
Yeah.
We have the mayor of Wainway.
I'm here.
Bob Berman.
Check.
Gary.
Check.
Hawaiian shirts. John Updike.
Here.
You have a Hawaiian shirt on, Dustin?
Yeah, okay.
And CIO, John. I don't see John today.
He just saw him. He's got a watch online.
Yeah, he's going to watch it online. I don't know.
Are we online?
Yeah, it's being broadcast, yes.
Okay, well, the first order of business is our work program.
What?
Well, I mean, the work.
I didn't put a work program in there.
No, here we go. Okay. From the business, zoning ordinance, housekeeping amendment package. We have the memorandum, chapter 14, code amendments, housekeeping amendments.
Yeah, Derek Tokos here, community development director. Back in January, we went, kind of covered a scoping memo on what would be in the housekeeping package and general agreement that these were legitimate housekeeping type items. I'm trying to, for the most part, be consistent with that. Although, as I noted in the memo, I did take the time to go ahead and pick up some required amendments that are in House Bill 2138 that just kicked out of this latest legislative session. Since that appears to be the only bill that's going to mandate changes that relate to our zoning code, there's some other legislation that kicked out, but it doesn't relate to specific code changes. So my plan of attack here was to kind of just go through, and I trust you all had at least a few minutes to look at the red line. Thanks, John, for reaching out. I didn't catch that the red line converted when it posted somehow and to kind of the finished product. So my plan is to kind of just kind of go through the red lines here, and I'm happy to make whatever changes you feel are needed as we go through this. If it looks reasonably close, then we reserve some time on your regular meeting to initiate this process so that we can provide the state notice and move the ball along. So I'm just kind of starting from the top and work through 35 pages of wonderful code changes with you guys. I'll try not to linger too much on any particular item. But so starting off,
let me just cut. We're going to go right straight through.
Mm-hmm.
All red, and if there are any questions, you ask them at the time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You have one right off the bat?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What do we got?
Official names.
Well, the official names.
Yeah.
May be referred to as Title 14,
right.
Ordinance or Code.
Right.
And then later on, in your notes, you say somewhere, well, it wasn't appropriate to refer to title here, so I'm referring to code or art, and, you know. There was some note to that effect. But this makes it sound like they're all identical terms.
That's what it is, you know, what, and this is common in these types of codes on the official name, is to make it clear that how it's framed in multiple different locations, it's still the official document. It might be called title. It might be called, you know, Title 14 or code or ordinance, we're all talking about the same document, not different documents.
Okay, well, I understand that, and that's so probably appropriate, although I wouldn't agree with that. I would just be consistent throughout calling Title 14. But it's fine to mix those, but if they must be identical. And then later on, as I said, one of your notes, you say it was inappropriate to use The title here, therefore, we change the word to something else, or maybe vice versa.
Okay, now sometimes that has not to do with the name, but the breadth of width that provision applies. Does it apply to the entire title,
okay,
or does it apply to a chapter or section?
Okay.
And so I'm pretty sure I know where that one's at when we hit it up.
Yeah, when we get there. Okay, good. Moving right on.
All right, we got off square one. And okay, now it's moving. Okay, purpose. Just kind of modest changes there. That last sentence, the standards and conditions contained herein have been reviewed and deemed consistent. That's more of a finding. That's not really talking about what the purpose of this ordinance is. It doesn't really need to be there. It shouldn't be there. Little stuff on applicability. Rules of construction, there are little bits of this scattered around in spots. This consolidates it. I think it makes it a little bit easier if you're trying to figure out how this flows and how you're to kind of interpret things.
Why is it called rules of construction?
Because that's kind of the rules of how the zoning ordinance is constructed. We could call it other things, but that's how I've seen it referred to in a few different codes.
Well, because when I see construction, and we're talking about zoning,
yeah,
you know, a rule about construction.
We could say like rules of code construction or rules of...
Rules of, yeah, sure.
That would be clear.
Yep. No problem. All right, first one is kind of the obvious, community development director or designee. That's we interpret it, we're the front line. We interpret it all the time with the public, all of the time. One thing I did clarify through here is how our interpretation can be appealed. It was worded awkwardly. The Planning Commission should not be the initial formal decision maker. We're making a call. If somebody doesn't like it, then we need to put it in writing so that they can appeal it to you and know what the different arguments are. So that's how that cleanup worked. Regulations are not more or less strict. I think these are fairly straightforward. If you have any questions on this one, it doesn't sound like it. Compliance requirements just moved below so that I didn't have to read them. Definitions, that section references, replicated all through the code. I didn't want to move it. So compliance moved down. There are some new definitions. Accessible unit. This came out of House Bill 2138. Came along with an additional component to affordable housing. And these relate to an additional use right, which we'll get to later, that we had to build into our code. 2138 expanded the scale of single room occupancies such that it effectively eliminated the need for a boarding or lodging or rooming house definition, because now they're just duplicated. They're the same thing. They, as the legislature's prone to do, chose to redefine what cottage cluster means. So that's the change. So 2138.
They changed it to only up to four units. The up to four units bothered me here. What do we call that development?
Well,
over there on what is Coast Street, the new one with the 10 units, that across the street from Nine Beach.
Well, it is a form of a cottage cluster. They just didn't submit it under formal rules. It's got a similar feel. Same with what we have down in Wilder.
Elsewhere in this package, it indicated that a cottage cluster could be 12 or 15.
Well, this says in subgroupings of four. They're trying to cluster them in little groupings of four, so you're not dealing with long row house type arrangement. That's what they're shooting for. Now, that definition also included I did keep the 900 square feet in there because it talked about small footprint. That's ambiguous.
Yeah.
Oops.
This is defining cottage clusters up to 4 units. If you have more than 4 units, it's not a cottage cluster.
It's subgroupings of up to 4 units in any configuration. You can have lots of more. You have quite a bit.
Subgroupings
of up to 4. That's what they put in the definition.
Okay.
They're just trying to break it up so you don't have 6, 8 of them in a row.
Right.
Kind of
that makes sense. But as long as it's not limiting the number of units in a cottage cluster.
No.
All right. Jim, I'm sorry. Did that answer the question you were questioning about?
Well, I mean, it says subgroupings of 4. Does that mean you can't have a subgroup of 5?
They're saying that's not a cottage cluster, not a subgroup. Now you could have, you know, you could have 2 clusters of 3.
I just think that's
3 and 2.
Really poorly written.
Don't even ask me to go down this path, please.
I mean, really poorly written.
This stuff's explicitly in a statute. I don't have a whole lot of flexibility, any flexibility there, really. Other than I think we can stick to a fixed square footage when they say small footprint, because I have no idea what a small footprint is. What, 500, 700?
400, 350.
Yeah, I mean, we have to call it somewhere, so. In fact, I didn't even put their definition for duplex in here because our regulations allow what they're trying to do, but they, instead of doing it as a regulation, they redefine what a duplex is so that the duplex is attached or detached units. You know how confusing that would be for the public? Walking in, and we tell them 2 detached units is a duplex? No, that's 2 single units, which we allow in many circumstances.
They ought not be allowed to define things differently than Webster does.
Lumber, these are a couple definitions that are just their legacy. That's the standard industrial code references. They're not referred to elsewhere in the code, so just got rid of them. They threw or detached units into single room occupancy.
I have a question on that. For single room occupancy, you have to be, you have to share a either sanitary or food prep area. You can't be self-contained.
Correct. That's not a SRO at that point. But so by throwing in word detached now, we have to allow basically little clusters of bedrooms.
Bedrooms,
yeah. Around, say, common kitchen, dining, restroom, shower facility building. It's an SRO. Just like if it was in an apartment complex type structure.
Okay, and what is the situation where I have a spare apartment or even just a bedroom that I rent out?
That's a home share if you're just renting out a bedroom
okay.
in your house.
So
that doesn't come into play here.
All right. It's
a
different
single
thing.
Room occupancy you don't have a full dwelling unit independent. I mean, they're not dwelling units.
They're
rooms,
sleeping
okay. units.
A metal tread. A metal tread.
Sounds like a college dorm. The new college dorms have, you know, like cluster of 4, and then they have a common bathroom that they
share. Suites.
But these could be completely detached units. So you could have a common area, and then that could be surrounded by
that's
sheds, basically.
I mean, there are building code standards that apply to that, so it wouldn't be, you know, like little tough sheds or something. You'd have to construct the residential occupancy per code. You'd have to have it properly insulated. It's going to have to deal with wind load, all that kind of stuff. But Yeah, I mean, it's throwing in detached, a different form of on the ground, obviously. But it's also not something, I mean, it's, they throw it in statute that applies to us, so we have to work with it as drafted to like fix it. The last few sessions, they've done a pretty good job of mucking up the statutes, and we've got a lot of different moving pieces now. Townhouse, this just brings our townhouse definition up to current statute. It didn't comply with current statutes, so this was an opportunity to fix it. Now you see compliance required.
What is that all about? Isn't that
what? The compliance required?
Yeah.
That's important for enforcement.
For what?
Enforcement of the zoning code.
Okay.
You need to have language in here that says, hey, look, you can't be building stuff without complying with the provisions of this ordinance.
Okay, so it's really just a boilerplate clause that allows enforcement.
Right, and it's commonly cited with enforcement. It says, hey, look, no, compliance required. You got to comply with these things. You know, relationship to easements, covenants. This talks about just, you know, how this document, you know, relates to other types of documents out there. It's not the intent of this document, the zoning ordinance, the title, however you want to call it, to interfere with other legally executed documents like easements or covenants or agreements. However, if this title is stricter than those, this title governs. And then rights of way, we had talked about this back in January. I just put some language in there to clarify the permitting authorities relative to public and private rights of way. Again, county, regional, state, federal laws, they all apply. By referencing them in this code does not mean it is the city's responsibility to enforce, say, county, state, or federal law. There are other individuals that enforce those laws in different contexts. So. All right, chapter 1402, the zoning map. We established the zones twice, so we had some redundant language in there. So I got rid of one of them so that we only have one of those. The biggie here is that our original language in here made reference to an official printed map, one that has not existed for a long time, well before I remember. And the language, what I put in here is what you're seeing in more modern codes, which is, hey, we maintain it digitally, and the official documents are those that are with the adopting documents, which would be ordinances. And if there's if you're confused with the digital side, go to the originals, which is pull the ordinance that actually made the change and see exactly what was done. That's the authorization to maintain in digital form right there under C. Adoption documents are referenced to.
Yeah, on D?
Yeah.
If the map could be maintained digitally, shouldn't map amendments and adoption documents also be allowed to be maintained electronically?
That under permanent retention under the state archives rules, we have to maintain a paper official copy of any ordinance. So, I mean, we can have a digital copy, and we do have digital copies of those, but we have to maintain a physical copy of those guys.
Really? What a waste.
Yeah. Sherry's just spending some quality. They just updated the state archiving rules. And Sherry's spending some quality time going through that. They actually extended out. Dustin will appreciate this. And we now have to maintain the plans for commercial now for 5 years. It used to be 2, right?
The physical copies?
Just the pen? Mm-hmm. Oh, they reduced it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's better.
Yeah.
I thought they. Okay.
No.
I know they changed a bunch of stuff as in terms of retention. So.
Where do you store all those?
Over at the wastewater treatment facilities, where a lot of our records are. Mm-hmm. All that stuff's been scanned.
Yeah.
We have digital copies of it all, but we still have to maintain physical paper in many contexts.
Crazy.
Keep moving. Zone boundaries. I think that was just some text updates. Oh, I got rid of references to railroad lines since we have none in the city. So we better not have any zone boundaries on railroad lines. This chapter establishes zone districts. We implement a comprehensive plan. I know it's commonly called the general plan or general land use plan in many jurisdictions, but ours is called comp plan. You probably want to be consistent there. Oh, brought in the concept of zoning overlays. We haven't done that previously, so we were just referencing base zones, but not really overlay zones, and so that's what this bit here is. We have quite a few overlays, as you can gather. I don't think it changed much in just some bad word choices, projects, products. You see the change, footnote 6 for the single room occupancy. Got rid of the rooming and boarding.
Just out of curiosity, what do you do when you run out of letters?
We'll probably at some point too when these footnotes start to get too complex, we'll have to come up with another way of organizing it. We can break it down by each use and kind of put together kind of the development standards that go with each. I mean, there's different ways to organize it. It's nice to have a table though that you can refer to. We bought ourselves a letter. We could go to AA, BB, CC if we have to do that too. So this is the provisions.
Where are the other asterisks? The asterisk ones.
They were here. These guys?
Which guy?
Talking about solar asterisks, like residential facility, movie theaters.
Okay.
Oh, I may have pulled out those just for purposes of doing the updates. I'll make sure they're there, Bob. I think I just pulled them out because as I was doing the updates. Anyhow, here's... So, as you know, we allow, a single-family house with a attached or detached ADU or a duplex. If one of those units is accessible, and this would be even in your R1, thus the definition we added, is an accessible or affordable unit, then we have to allow one additional attached or detached dwelling on the property, irrespective of the density limits. So we don't see a lot of that.
No, but in my backyard, then I could have an ADU and a whole nother...
If one of the units was accessible or affordable. So
you throw up an ADU and then you can build your second home in your backyard. Is that? I mean, I know it's silly, but.
You can't, accessory dwelling, you can't lead with that. You have to have a principal dwelling
right.
With your accessory.
I've got that.
But say you make your accessory dwelling unit accessible, then you get another dwelling unit. That's what that means.
Another accessory dwelling unit?
Yep.
So you can have 2 ADUs as long as one of them can get a wheelchair to it?
Yep.
Sweet.
Dustin's got ideas. But like I said, we don't see that many affordable or accessible units on the single family front. We see them in the multifamily context all the time, but not so much in the single family.
Could you go back up to the next red area? Yeah, 130.
This is for the SROs. Three times the maximum number of multifamily units, four lots of parcels where five or more multifamily units are allowed. So this is going to be in your R3 and the R4s. We don't allow multifamily in the R1 and R2.
Okay. Thank you.
Just add an S to times.
Oh, thank you.
Bob, you're supposed to catch that stuff.
No, Joe. What happened?
He was about to, I'm sure.
That's right. I caught another one that I even mentioned as we've gone through here. I'll go back and fix it. It's just a typo. Let's see here. There. Oh, yeah. I got rid of some bad verbiage that was in there. XC. Don't know. Bad cross section reference. I'll fix that. I had to. Oh, this is one I want to talk. We mentioned doing this back in January, so I put it under general exceptions to required yards. Seemed to fit there. This has to do with no build easements, which we occasionally do. Most often, it'll come up in the context of very old lots and homes where they were situated well before they had any real thought to setbacks and ways of accommodating that. And so in some circumstances, what somebody will have is a no-build easement. And so if they get a no-build easement, they get it recorded, then what this would do is, for purposes of applying a setback, it would take it from the from the far extent of your easement area, that you'd be able to include the easement area as part of your setback area, provided you're not going over your property line proper. So you still have to maintain your eaves, all that has to stay on your property. So you do know what a no-build easement is? I mean, I'm not throwing anybody on this, right?
Well, no, I don't know what it is, and I thought I knew what it was until you said you can't go across the property line. I thought it was, I get from my neighbor a piece of paper that says, I'm never going to build on the south 10 feet of my yard lot. And
yeah,
then you take common. That and you count that 10 feet.
Say you have a side yard setback, and that's commonly 5, could be 8 feet in the R1, okay? And say you don't meet that, but you get a no-build easement for 3 feet of your neighbor's property, and that then allows you to meet that setback.
And count that as part of your setback.
Correct. You're still...
But it goes across the property, and the easement, by definition, is something
that's correct, but your structure doesn't. Your structure is still entirely contained on your property.
Well,
that's what that gets at.
Okay, that makes more sense.
this just puts in an appropriate cross reference to the adjustment process if you're looking for an exception to a required yard. Minimum lot sizes. Just to clean up in the lot size provisions. If you want an exception to lot size, remember, we built that in, that you can get a adjustment, for example, to lot size now. That was ordinance 2222. Again, just cleanup work on density limits. Parking. I had to change the parking requirement for SROs because of the House Bill 2138. No more than one space for every three rooms now. They put some language in there, if you looked at 2138, that says we can't require more parking for SROs than we do for, let's say, single-family home in certain circumstances, or for apartments. So I was looking at it there. That's how I ended up adjusting it. Just some cleanup there. Clear vision areas where we put in some language. We had talked about allowing the fences to be up to 4 feet high, even in a clear vision area. If it's required for a family child care home or child care center, there's an administrative rule that requires their fencing be at least be 4 feet in height. And we have run into this issue already once on a corner lot type situation where we've had child care and they're like, well, 3 feet doesn't meet our rule, doesn't meet the state's rules. This is not a big exception. I mean, pretty narrowly tailored to that specific use. So I don't see it creating hazards throughout town. And I don't know that a 4 foot fence height is going to be overly problematic.
Why can't these all be 4 feet? Why can't these all be 4 feet?
Well, I think you do run into that situation with some vehicles where you're much lower down, where you're going to have a difficult time seeing. But this is pretty narrowly tailored to these two types of uses, so it's not going to come up that often.
Recombinant bike.
They're just short, like 3 foot fences in the front are short. Yeah. I have them in front of my house.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you can go full on the back though. I mean, you still have your full height allowances. So
the clear vision enforcement, is that complaint based?
Typically, unless we see something egregious, our code enforcement folks can be proactive on that.
And of course, there's nothing about parking, so
no.
A big truck and trailer, not a commercial, but I'm talking about a travel trailer or something, parked legally that totally blocks the view or turning onto the street, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, we can take a look at, we can strike, if you have an actual curb on that street, for example, we can paint those no parking if we have an issue, and at that point, if they're parking there, then they'll get ticketed.
But it's complaint based, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, we already have, in particular, like, say, in Night Beach, some of those other areas where we have a lot more density, you'll see areas where we've already striped to try to prevent vehicles from doing what you're talking about.
Does the city do that, though, or just individual homeowners?
No, we do. It would be a traffic order from the city engineer. I mean, the request can come up from individuals.
Got it.
But the call would be the city engineer, and then that gets routed to Public Works, goes into their work basket. Landscaping. We talked about getting rid of this CPI-adjusted approach here, CPI-adjusted approach, to go more with, and what I put in here would be substantial improvement. Remember, landscaping does not apply to single-family attached or detached. We're talking about multifamily or commercial projects. So when the landscaping standards don't apply to the single-family stuff at all. Haven't never applied to them. So substantial improvement is a defined term. We use it already in the context of complying with design standards in Night Beach or floodplain. That's another one where you'd have to elevate a house. So that's you know, if you're doing something that's 50% or more value, you know, of what you have on that property, of your existing improvement, and that's a substantial improvement by definition, that would trigger the landscaping requirements, full landscaping requirements. A lot easier for us to manage than having to go in and adjust based on CPI, you know, burn thresholds every year, which is really onerous.
At 50% sounds very high. The idea is to ultimately bring every property into compliance, which of course will never happen, but 50% is a big upgrade.
It is, but then you get full compliance, you'll get full compliance at that point, not partial compliance. So
somebody with the, let's say, the affordable housing up there on 60th,
mm-hmm.
if they wanted to put in another block, that wouldn't trigger anything, because it would be 20%.
Yeah, I think the way I think of it, like what they did at Nate's Place, it used to be the travel lodge there. That's not gonna get anywhere near 50%. That was pretty modest, the work that they had to do on those units to convert them over for the purpose of using now transitional housing. But say it was a motel, then though you had to tear down half of it and rebuild. Well, now you're into it,
yeah.
You know. So, and that's probably an appropriate time for you to be complying with landscaping if you're tearing down a building or reconstructing it in a significant way.
50% refers to value.
Yeah, market value of the existing improvement. That's a defined term. Yeah. And well understood on our front, because we have to use it in floodplain, and we also use it in designs, so we use it elsewhere.
How do you determine that? Just by the county assessor?
Yeah, typically, yeah.
Okay.
That was just getting rid of the reference to News Times. Nothing much there. Got a bad mistype more.
So, question on the circulation thing. It says circulation in the city.
Which one is this?
The notice of intent for publishing.
Is this back up?
Just above 14.25. Yeah, there. In the city. So years from now, the only thing handy is in yachts. Would that meet this?
If it's there's no Lincoln Leader, circulating in the city.
So that's
that would mean
so anything on the internet is circulated in the city? How do you define that for digital?
I think we're going to have to come up with, that it's commonly available or accessible or something that would be referenced. The digital option was made available not too long ago. But they didn't really put sidebars on it. So it's a good question. I think tying it back to general circulation, maybe that's not the best word. I don't know if you got a better idea on that one. But
I don't.
Yeah. Just straight up digital with no reference to the city at all. I mean, heck, that could be something that nobody looks at.
Yeah.
And of what use is it? I mean, from our perspective, we're trying to provide notice that's meaningful to people. One would hope that we're not try and put publications and
you can't do it. You can only do one in a utility bill at a time, right? You can't put like a bunch of stuff in there.
Correct. We have limits on throwing utility bills.
In fact, that's always such a good one because it goes to everyone in the city.
What about general availability instead of circulation? It's just circulation is such a print-based
good point.
Word. that we can cover that digital landscape, however that's defined, I don't know.
No, I like that. That's helpful. Not circulation. Okay. There's little stuff in short-term rentals, like cleaner language there, and then mistyped street name down here. A legal description. Iron Mountain impact area. Bopped out boarding houses with single room occupancy.
Can you talk about that a little bit? I've seen reference to it, but I've never seen it actually in any requests we've ever had. Or
yeah, you rarely have anything in that area. The Iron Mountain impact area is all around surrounds the Iron Mountain quarry. A lot of that is industrial. Good chunk of it's not developed right now. Paul Austin's property, for example, falls within that. That's about 26 acres of undeveloped medium industrial property there. And then you have an existing developed R4 stuff south of the road. So there's not much there for any kind of redevelopment where it would come into play. So
I haven't looked at the extent of it, but there's a lot of things that are not allowed there. Mm-hmm. I was very surprised.
Yeah, you know, the objective with the Iron Mountain overlay was to slow down residential encroachment on the quarry, because quarry is a Goal 5 resource. It's considered protected just as much as, you know, a sensitive stream or wetland is. And residential use is a conflicting use. People don't like to hear the sounds of the quarry. They don't like to see the trucks come out of quarries. And so you don't want, you know, too many homes around a quarry is kind of a kiss of death for the quarry at some point. So.
Okay.
Cleanup language. Yeah, got rid of an old reference to when we had the subdivision ordinance separate from the zoning ordinance. Why those went bye-bye. Oh, question for you guys. So assisted living facilities are needed housing. I don't think it's ambiguous. I included the needed housing definition in your packet from state law. If it's needed housing, we have to offer a clear and objective path for approval. We cannot subject assisted living in the R2 exclusively to a conditional use review. You can't do it. It's not legal. So the question really is, if you're going to allow it, it has to have a clear and objective path for approval. I adjusted the standards here so that it's a clear and objective path for approval in the R2. Alternatively, you don't allow assisted living in the R2. It's already allowed in the R3 and R4, so you're not obligated to allow it. I can't think of the last project the city did that even caused this whole chapter to be crafted. So I didn't try to go do the deep dive on the legislative history on that. I do know it predates the needed housing provisions, which said you can't do that. So we can leave it this way, which is assisted living facilities will continue to be allowed in the R2. They just won't be going through a conditional use discretionary approval by a planning commission. We'll just approve them subject to the clear and objective standards, or we can get it out of the R2, in which case I just take the whole chapter out. 14.4.1 is reserved for future use. You guys have thoughts on that? You'll see the changes I made on this really were, you have to get rid of discretionary language. So outward modification of a structure has to be compatible with the character of the neighborhood. That's discretionary. We can't have that. Most of the other standards, frankly, were clear and objective. I mean, you're talking about specific square footage references, parking requirements explicit, minimum lot size is explicit. The screening vegetation is clear enough. Signage stuff is clear and objective. Height limits stuff, clear and objective. Setbacks, same. This one was too discretionary. The landscaping screening may include and shall provide protection outside the boundary lines of the parcel comparable to that otherwise required. That's getting a little mushy. Why don't you use your words like comparable, compatible, similar? I mean, that's where you're into the discretionary stuff. And for whatever reason, we have a standard in there for food delivery, but again, that's clear and objective. I mean, very specific hours.
So with R3 and R4, it's just allowed outright.
Correct. Yep.
And
R2, you could have, I think most of these standards were crafted for with the concept of assisted living being a multifamily type construction, which is typical. It's you don't see it as often in more of a group home type arrangement, but then if you had it like a group home, it wouldn't necessarily be it would be a single family occupancy at that point, where you had a house and that people were renting. That's going to be a single family. Now, so this is really, I think, was crafted back in the day in the context of, say, a 50-unit assisted living facility or something like that. Pick your number, but you get what I'm going after.
I don't feel strongly about it one way or the other. So I'm not there yet.
I just leave it here, then, with clear and objective standards and go with it that way.
It'd still be restricted by the zoning height of R2, right?
Like you'll get that back up here.
So then, why not just have it be allowed? They're still going to match the same profile as any other housing that happens in R2.
It has to meet the building height requirements of the R2, which is going to require a lower profile.
That's what I mean. It's not going to be a three-story building.
No, it's going to be two. It's a good point. That's a 30-foot maximum.
And so then in that way, why not just let it be anywhere in town? Like a little two-story assisted living.
Just leave it then as is then with the changes. That access was pretty minor. Visions, I think, was pretty minor. The only changes on the approval authority stuff was just cleaning up the interpretation stuff to make it clear. Staff makes it the interpretation. That's appealable to the Planning Commission if somebody doesn't like it.
Oh, that was one. I'm sorry. I think you're probably past it.
No, that's fair.
Back to just before 1447, pedestrian access.
Going there.
Last paragraph before that. H. I mean, I know it's not something you're changing.
That's the last standard for assisted living.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I want a pizza at 8 o'clock at night, I can't order one?
I think this is getting a larger. I think this is getting larger deliveries to assisted living facilities. Where they're bringing in,
Oh, DoorDash.
And that includes that. You can just say commercial deliveries as opposed to.
We throw commercial deliveries in there.
Well,
okay. And the like. I love that phrase in code.
Oh, I'll get rid of that.
Yeah, I mean, there goes
that, that's too discretionary.
Good catch. So you would make these changes to have these, I won't call them conditions, but have the requirements clear, and then on the chart you would change it from C to P?
Correct.
In R2. Okay, yeah, so I think it's C right now.
Yeah, I need to check that to a seat.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think I wrapped it up. I think the rest of these, yeah, we discussed these, so. Okay, I've got my list. It's not too bad. Yeah, this stuff gets mundane. This stuff is painful. Okay.
Well, thank you, Derek. Anytime we can clean up cross-references and misspellings and all those things. I know how much work it is, but it's worth doing.
Right, and there's going to be more down the road. This whole Muni code transfer thing has been tough. Our staff in the city manager office was managing it out for an extended period of time. We're finally going to get Muni codes to upload our code to their website, but I don't think they made all of the terminology as consistent as I think they led us to believe they would. So I think we're going to have another round on that down the road, Bob.
Yeah, we had one version, and then you said don't be looking at it. So,
right.
Yeah. Okay.
But we have a final version now. It's complete. It didn't pick up all of that stuff. You're going to see, you know, terminology not be as consistent as you like, and that kind of thing that didn't get picked up by them.
Sort of like a title and an ordinance. And,
yeah. Right. I'm focusing on 14. This is for the entire Muni codes.
Is 14 the biggest chapter?
Yeah. And it typically is. Zoning is typically the biggest for any city. It's going to be the biggest one. All right, Bill, that's all I had on that topic.
What about the, there's a house bill in there that you marked up?
Yep. Where I marked it up kind of correlates to the changes. So where I did the highlights on that, I was just, so for mine, I was just pointing out where in the bill the language was that was directing us to make the changes I reflected in the document.
Okay, that brings us up to the wastewater.
Yeah. Nothing like part two of the wastewater master plan happening, what, 7 years after part one? Brown Caldwell took a while on that one. So let me go ahead and bring that up. Yep, that's the wrong day. Right one up. There we go. So I attached the administrative rule that relates to master plans. It effectively says that when you do a facility master plan, and it's OAR 660, Division 11045, I believe is what it was. So there's a copy of it in your packet. It says anytime a city does a facility plan, it has to adopt it into its comp plan. It has to, at a minimum, adopt in the projects, an explanation of the existing facilities, the projects that are recommended out of that plan, and you know, any policies you want to adopt as part of that, this would be the time to do it. And then you adopt the full plan by reference. And the way we've set up our comp plan is that under our wastewater policies, we have a spot to add in updated plans. And so I'll show you where that's at. And that's the only real policy change that I have in here. So what you're looking at here is the wastewater facilities. Descriptive information in the comp plan. This had been made reference to the sanitary sewer plan of 2018, which was the collections component of it. So I spent a little bit of time clarifying the collections master plan from the treatment master plan, because because they're two different documents with different sets of recommendations. So to be clear, the collections dealt with most of our pump stations and piping that's collecting effluent and taking it to the wastewater treatment plant. This 2025, May of 25, treatment master plan is dealing with upgrades that need to be made to the wastewater treatment plant in South Beach, and then the north side pump station, which is our principal pump station, which is pushing that waste over to the South Beach treatment plant floor.
Which one, where is that?
That's the one in, not just outside of Nine Beach there, down in that, down below, it's on Nye and Third, I believe. Think of, remember where that Cardfill fuel station was, they just recently took it out and scrapped?
Yeah.
I think it's down in that
just area. Below there. Okay. Just east of that?
Yeah. It's not particularly visible, which is a good thing. Anyway, that's the one north side piece that's in this treatment plan. You'll see in there. So just added in some language in here that gets at different population estimates between the two documents, so explain what was done. Brought in the population forecast that they use for the treatment plan, which is this chart here. And then going into the recommended projects, these are the projects from that. Your near term is what we're trying to tackle with the schedule here. The longer term stuff, who knows at those prices, how we're going to fund some of that stuff. But the near term, we're already working with DEQ on low interest loans. We will ensure DEQ receives a copy of this as we go through the adoption process, because they want to see that this is formally adopted before they will release any kind of funding for construction. They'll provide funding for design, and we've already obtained some of that for some of this work, but they'll not authorize any kind of construction dollars until we've actually formally adopted this. So that's the real pressing piece here, is we got to adopt it so that we're eligible for that kind of funding. I think there's still some work to be done on value engineering stuff at the wastewater treatment plant, because some of this stuff is really pricey. It's can we get by with something that's not quite as expensive in terms of the long, particularly some of the long-term solutions?
The dollar figures are $25.
You can't see it very well, but
do we say that? I'm reading the footnotes, but I'm not seeing it.
It's once the red line converts over, that'll be white text on the blue there. That says $25 up there. You just can't.
Ah, okay. Got it. Thank you.
But once it's accepted, it'll be actually white, so okay. Easy enough to read.
You've actually broken this down very well.
Oh, thanks.
Been involved with the red grants for two sewage treatment plants in different communities. I wish I had all this information that you have.
Yeah, so yeah, this is your summary stuff, and then policy-wise, it was just a little right there.
Did a good job.
So this is the sub D there is what pulls this particular document in as an official document.
Ties it up.
The appropriation for Newport that was in the state's funding bill, is that for one of these categories? I thought there was about $3 million that we got.
I'll have to take a look at that, John. There was some funding for on the wastewater treatment plant side, but
yeah.
I haven't personally tracked that closely, so I have to talk to engineering. I can have some information on that.
It'd be good to sync up, you know.
Yeah, I can have some information for you.
Timing requirement to that, make sure it matches whatever we're putting in here, right?
Sure. I didn't think this one would take that long. It didn't. It's about 10 minutes. So that's all I had. Just as just a heads up, we just sent notice out for, got public hearing coming up on City Center on the comp plan policies as your next meeting. So I do expect your regular meeting to be a little more robust. You'll probably have a few people here for that one. And then your work session will be a little bit busy too, because we're going to have the form use code coming to you on the 28th. See if we can't get through that. If we can't, then we'll carry it over. We'll have Marcy from Herbworks here to kind of walk through the form-based code and explain some of those components to you.
Okay. That ends the work session.
It's like 7 o'clock.
Yeah.